tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. I'm Mark LeValnier, coming up in this hour, Mystery. Later on, from the New Adventures of Michael Shane from 1948. But first, it's The Adventures of Maisie, an MGM syndicated broadcast from October 4th, 1951.
Hiya, babe. Say, how about a... Ouch.
Does that answer your question, buddy?
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. You all remember Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's famous Maisie pictures. In just a moment, you will hear Maisie in radio, starring the same glamorous star you all went to see and loved on the screen, Ann Southern.
Yep, I'm Maisie, like the man said. Maisie Revere of Brooklyn. But right at the moment, it looks like I'm going to be Maisie Revere of Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe freight car number 745377. Jeepers, it has more stuff written on it than the fence at Ebbets Field. Well, maybe you wonder what I'm doing here. I had a job in a nightclub that was owned by a woman. Well, she liked the master of ceremonies, and he liked me, and I liked to stay healthy, so I left. Especially after I got an anonymous note on her stationery that said, "Flowers don't care who they lie on." Well, I can take a hint. So I hiked out to the freight yards and, well, here's a car that looks nice and empty. Slide the old suitcase in. Get in myself. This ought to get me into the city by tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow afternoon, I should judge.
Okay, maybe it'll be Hey, who said that?
That was me, the empty boxcar. Boy, that was pretty funny, huh?
Not very.
Hey, are you trying to insult me?
Yeah, but I'm not making much headway.
Well, I guess you just saw because I sort of scared you when you thought this boxcar was empty, huh?
No, not really. Well, I'll get going and find another car.
No, no, that's all. You can stay here. I'm a gentleman.
Well, that's nice because I'm a lady.
Yeah, I couldn't tell that you was. At least I knew that you wasn't a gentleman.
Thanks, I suppose. Well, I guess we're about ready to take off.
You see, it happens that not only am I a gentleman, I am also a poet.
A poet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I'd better find another car after all.
Well, I'm pretty good, too. You see, I'm a sort of between Edgar A. Guest and T.S. Eliot.
So am I, and I don't write poetry. Did you ever have anything published?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Sure. Apparently, you aren't a regular reader of the Hobo News.
Oh, well, no, I move around too much.
All right, you fools, get out of this car before I shake you out.
Uh-oh, the yard dick.
Well, well, look what we got here. Well, girlie, I'm going to arrest you. I'm going to have you tossed in a jug.
Oh, stop being such a big man. If you want me to get out of the car, I'll go, and that's all.
I'm going to throw you in jail, girlie. Unless...
Now, mind your business.
Oh, you want to get tough with me, huh? I'll rough you up a little, and...
Oh, no, you won't.
Hey, hey, look out, you. I got a club.
You had a club. Give me that.
No. Ooh, ow.
Stubbleboard.
Now, I'm just going to flop you down nice and solid.
No, don't. Help.
Oh. Hey, that was wonderful. Quick, the train's moving.
You are, look, John. There.
Gee, you're strong.
Yeah, I'm real strong, but I'm especially good as a poet.
Oh, I sure appreciated your brushing off that switchyard, sweetheart. Especially after the way I was sort of kidding you.
Oh, well, that was indeed a pleasure. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Henry Glendennon Diller.
Oh, well, my name's Maisie Revere. But say, I think I know who you are. Didn't you used to do a wrestle anybody in the crowd act with the little carnival once?
Yeah, I did. That was an unhappy chapter of my life.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. You got fired because you were too embarrassed when you took your T-shirt off. Yeah.
I haven't had a good paying job since I was hired to play football at college.
Oh. Henry, you know something?
What?
You need an agent. Somebody who can sell you to a big wrestling promoter in the city.
Yeah?
Say, I wonder if I could do it. I'll bet I could.
Oh, no, gee, don't bother about me.
Oh, well, you didn't have to bother about me when that yard dick was getting fresh, but you did. And I appreciate it.
Well, hey, that's swell. But would you do me one other little favor?
It all depends. Some men have funny ideas about what's a little favor.
Would you listen to some of my poetry?
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy, all right, okay. This here poem, this is called Night. Night by Henry Glenn Dannon Dillon. I think that I shall never write a poem lovely as the night.
This is more of a favor than I realize.
The night upon whose diamond-sprinkled chest the moon lies down and makes her nest.
Boss, this here is Maisie Revere.
No kid.
I'm glad to meet you, Harry.
You should be. Cigar me, Jake.
Right, boss.
March me, Jake.
Right, boss.
Hey, what about me?
Give her a cigar, too, Jake.
Hey, right, boss.
Oh, get that El Ropo away from me. Listen, Harry, are you looking for a sensational new wrestler, or are you as big a jerk as I heard you were?
Well, Maisie, I can see you're sensational, but how good a wrestler are you?
You know I'm not talking about myself, but I could flip Jake off his feet in 2 seconds.
Toss her around, Jake.
Hey, okay, boys.
Are you next, Harry?
Get up and match me, Jake. My cigar went out.
I've got news for you. Jake's out, too.
Jake.
Yeah, boys.
Toss her out in the street.
Oh, no, boys. I quit.
Oh. Well, maybe you'd like to try sidewalking me yourself, huh?
No, but I got somebody who can't talk out.
Sit down, Harry. Jake, re-cigar him.
Okay, Maisie.
Rematch him.
Okay, boys.
Maybe you ought to brain him, too. He could use one.
What's your proposition?
Well, I've got a wonderful wrestler. He's got a terrific physique. He knows all the holds. And was intercollegiate wrestling champion in college.
Now, look, Macy, we don't need no new performers here. It takes too long to get a new man up in the pot. We like our own little stock company. In other words, scram.
Okay, Harry. There's another wrestling promoter in this town. I'll go over and see Joey Madero.
You're wasting your time, Macy. I'm Joey Madero, too. Now what are you going to do?
Gee. Well, I guess I'll take your first suggestion. I'll scram.
Good. It was nice meeting you. Don't come back.
Don't worry, I will. I'll find some way to work my wrestler in, whether you like it or not. Oh, just another fresh wrestler. Hey, that's no wolf. That may be opportunity knocking at my door.
Hiya, beautiful.
Ah, oh, hello, you gorgeous hunk of plunder.
Oh, boy.
What's your name, you wonderful thing?
I'm Ape Man Anderson.
Well, my name's Maisie Revere. Gee, Ape, you sure are stacked.
Yes, I sure are. Hey, you want to feel my muscles?
Well, not right now. Some other time, huh?
Sure, anytime. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
I'll give you a call, Ape. You sort of do something to me.
Wow!
Come on now, Henry. I want to hear real agony. Put everything you got into it.
Yeah.
Well, that's better, but it's too realistic. Can't you overdo it a little bit? Try again.
All right, but would you mind bending my arm? That'll help.
Okay, Henry. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Making great progress with you, Henry. Oh, and that reminds me. We're going to change your name, too. Yeah. You're going to be known as Killer Diller, the murderous poet.
That's great. What do I do next?
Well, you got to learn how to argue with the referee, how to be knocked out, and how to annoy the crowd and make them hate you. But maybe the poems will help do that.
That's swell. But how am I going to get a chance to wrestle?
Oh, well, just leave that to me. This coming Friday night, Ape Man Anderson will be missing.
Harry, Larry's coming out in just a second, Maisie.
Thanks, Jake. What's doing tonight?
Oh, Ape Man Anderson ain't showed up.
Gee, maybe a break for me. Well, hello, Harry. I hear Ape Man Anderson is still swinging in the trees somewhere.
Cigarette me, Jake. I'm too nervous to be cigar.
Right, boss.
You still trying to sell me a grunt and groaner?
Well, you won't regret it, Harry. Would you like to look at him? Hey, Killer.
Yeah.
Harry, this is Killer Diller, the murderous poet.
Oh, glad to know you, Harry.
Most people are. Okay, Killer, you look all right to me. You lose tonight.
Well, now that means you play the part of the losing wrestler, Henry.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, what about the poem? Poem?
Oh, well, there's one condition, Harry. The killer insists on reading a short poem to the crowd before the match. Well, the only reason he's wrestling is to get his poems before the public.
That's all.
Well, okay, Harry. Come on, Killer.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. I'll even try it. Go in and change, Killer.
Okay. Oh, gee, at least I get to read a poem to a crowd. Oh.
Yeah. Cigar me, Jake. I'm calm again.
Right, boss.
Maisie, you know, you're awful pushy. I hope I don't find out that you had nothing to do with the ape man being missing.
Oh, what made you think of a silly thing like that? Imagine. Well, what could I do? That's the silliest thing I ever heard.
I got you a little worried. Your hands are shaking.
Who, me? I'm just worried about Killer Diller.
What about him? Afraid he'll get hurt?
Yeah. After he reads his poem, I'm afraid the crowd will kill him before the other wrestler gets a chance.
Okay, Maisie, I'll announce you to the crowd here, and you can announce Killer Diller.
Okay, thanks.
What can I say about you? What have you done around here?
Well, I've done plenty, but nobody knows it yet. Just tell them my name.
Okay. Hey, Jake.
Yeah?
Bell me.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, before the next match, I have the pleasure of introducing to you a young lady who is a famous figure in the sporting world. And what a figure! Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, I know her, you know her, we all love her, and here she is, Maisie Riviera!
And ladies and gentlemen, Killer Diller, the murderous poet, is only wrestling to call the attention of the public to his poem. He hopes to win your applause as a wrestler, but he especially hopes you will like his poem. And here he is, Killer Diller, with one of his poems.
Quiet, please. Quiet, will you? All right. My poem is entitled The Yellow Crocus. I love the yellow crocus that crops up in the spring. I hate to mow my lawn for fear I'll cut the little thing. I see the head of yellow crocus yelling out to me. Crocus, crocus, please don't crocus, but a crocus is your say.
Dressed and ready to go, Maisie.
Oh, swell. And congratulations, Henry. You were sensational. The crowd was crazy about you.
They're crazy about me? They did nothing but boo me.
I know, but they hated you better than anybody. That's what you want.
You hear the way they booed my poetry?
Yeah. Well, of course, sometimes they're on the level. Well, here comes Harry and Jake.
Hello, Maisie. Hello, Killer.
Hello, Harry.
Oh.
How'd you like it?
It was a good show, Maisie.
Thanks. Didn't you think the killer put on a swell performance?
Yeah, that poultry gag's a honey. Write a few more from Maisie.
Hey, wait a minute. That poultry is no gag because I write those poems myself.
And you admit it? What's wrong with them? Nothing. Nothing there, peachy. Just write some more.
Okay. All right, but do I have to lose the next time?
If you read them poems, you gotta lose, yeah.
Oh, gee, I...
Well, it's only justice, Killer. The crowd would insist. Oh, Harry, there's a little matter of money.
Oh, yeah. Jake, $10, huh? 10 times.
Right, boys.
Oh, thanks, Harry. When does the Killer wrestle again?
I'll make a place for him tomorrow night.
Oh, and I got another idea, Harry. Why don't you let me broadcast the match? I've been in show business.
Yeah, but this here's wrestler.
Well, quit kidding yourself. This is show business. A girl sportscaster might be an idea, you know.
What about the wrestling hold?
Well, I'll make them up.
Okay, Maisie. See you early tomorrow. I'll tell you who wins and loses, how it's been rehearsed, and you can sound like you know something about wrestling.
Right. Thanks. Well, come on, Killer. Let's go.
Yeah, okay. Goodbye, folks. See, I got an elegant poem to read tomorrow.
You ain't seen Eggman Anderson, have you, Maisie?
No, I haven't, Harry. Come on, Killer. Let's get out of this door.
Soraya!
Oh, Abe. Oh, well, gee, I'm glad to see you. Eight-Man Anderson, meet Killer Diller.
Hello.
Hello, sucker.
Oh, yeah, we'll laugh this off, fathead.
Hey, get hide. Okay, you asked for it.
All right. Boys,
stop. Boys, just made each other. Cut it out. Stop. Stop before I beat you both up. Stop. Now. Excuse us a second, Killer. I want to talk to Ape a minute alone.
Well, okay, you can talk to him alone, but I gotta be with you.
No, you stay right here. Come on, Apey boy.
Doggone you, Maisie. I waited for you, and then I couldn't get back here in time.
Oh, well, now, Apey, please don't get mad. All I did was double-cross you a little bit, darling.
Well, I'm gonna tell that Harry... Darling.
Oh, Ape. Any girl in her right mind would be crazy about a magnificent mass of muscle like you. And what a mass you are.
You're just saying that because you're afraid Harry will have you bumped off if he finds out what you've done.
Oh, well, you wouldn't do that, would you, Abe?
I don't know. I've done some awful stupid things. And who is this other guy?
Oh, well, he's a wrestler I'm trying to help get a start in the business.
Well, I don't like him. He's a bigger chick than I am.
Oh, no, he isn't, Abe. Nobody is. You're the top.
Oh, thanks, beautiful. But if you don't give me a date, I'm going to tell Harry on you.
Well, I'll give you a date. And what's more, I'm going to broadcast the matches tomorrow, and I'll give you a specially good treatment.
Okay. And when we have our date, I want specially good treatment, too. Oh, boy. See you tomorrow, Maisie.
Yeah. Bye. Jeepers, I'm getting trapped.
He didn't get fresh with you, did he?
No, but he's got plans.
Well, just wait till I wrestle him. I'll ruin him. I won't lose to him no matter what anybody tells
me. Now, look, Henry, just keep calm. Don't do anything you're not supposed to do until I get you fixed up in the wrestling business like I promised I would.
Well, okay, Maisie. But as soon as I get fixed up, do you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to ask you to marry me.
Oh. You better go in and change now, Killer. And don't forget, you lose tonight again.
Okay, darn it.
You're matched with Heebie-Jeebie, the Jersey bouncer.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You met him at rehearsal this morning.
Oh, gosh, I hate to have a guy kicking my brains out in front of the girl that I love.
Henry, I told you to forget about that. And see that you don't tell Heebie-Jeebie to throw you into my lap again, either.
That was fun.
Well, not for me.
Well, gee, Maisie, you go out with Ape-Man Anderson. Why don't you go out with me?
Well, I have to go out with him, or he'll tell Harry how I tricked him away so he couldn't show up that night you got your start. If Harry knew, I'd suddenly disappear and he'd take you over as his wrestler.
Oh, boy, someday I'm going to wrestle that Ape-Man Anderson. It'll be just too bad for him.
Well, run along now and change.
Okay.
Jeepers, what a mess.
Maisie, the Killer knows he's supposed to lose again, don't he?
Oh, yeah, Harry, he does.
Oh, good. Cigar me, Jay.
You're right, boss.
Yeah, if anything goes wrong tonight, I'll be in trouble with the syndicate, and you'll be covered with lilies. They're clear?
Mm-hmm. Very clear.
Yeah, well, I'm making a change in the lineup, too. Tonight, Killer Dilla's going to wrestle Ape Man Anderson.
Oh, no.
Ape Man Anderson's been pestering me for 2 weeks.
Oh, but they'll kill each other. You wouldn't want him to do that without advance billing, would you?
I'm putting on a show for the syndicate tonight, so it's okay. Jay?
Yeah, boys?
Watch Maisie tonight.
Huh? Wrist watcher or pocket watcher?
Keep an eye on her.
Oh.
Don't let her talk to either of the wrestlers.
No.
And if anything goes wrong, bring it to me right away. Dead or alive.
Man Anderson is flexing his muscles in his corner and making faces at Killer Diller. As the killer comes up to the microphone to be introduced and read his customary poem, as he calls it. The management here was selling empty pop bottles at the gate tonight, and there's a rumor that unless the quality of the killer's poetry improves, next week they'll rent rifles to the crowd. Here's the ring announcer.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, before the match begins, Killer Dilla will read one of his famous poems.
I can't stand to hear another poem. I'd rather die.
Oh, dear lover, just shot himself in the balcony.
The management asks you to kindly refrain from throwing bottles at Killer Dilla until he is through. And now, here is Killer Dilla, the murderous poet.
Thank you, my friends. My poem tonight is entitled Dear Wrestler. Under the spreading ringside lights, the famous wrestler appears. The wrestler, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy ears.
Oh, wait a minute. Ape Man Anderson listened to the middle of the mat and snatched the poem from Killer Diller. He's tearing it up. Oh, boy, the killer is furious and the fight's on. Folks, somebody's going to get murdered tonight. Even if it's only your faithful announcer, Maisie Revere. Right, Jake?
Right.
What a battle this has been. It's been killed and savage. And now Ape Man Anderson has a double reverse headlock on Killer Diller, and he slammed his head on the ring post. And now the killer has slipped out of the hold, and he's lifted Ape Man over his head. And down he comes. Oh, did you hear that? But Ape Man's up again. He tries a flying backward double camel kick, and he misses Killer and kicks the referee. And that'll be the third referee they've used up in this match. Oh, this is brutal. Get him, Killer. I mean, get him, Ape Man. And Ape Man Anderson just jammed his elbow into the killer's mouth. And now he's banging Killer Diller's head right up by our microphone here. Get him, Ape Man. You gotta win.
So that's the way you're feeling. Well, I'll show you.
No, Henry. Henry, don't do it. Excuse me, folks, but Killer Diller is just... Oh, no. He's just bitten a chunk out of Ape Man Anderson, and now he's got Ape Man over his head, and he's going to slam him down. This is Maisie Revere saying goodbye to you and good luck to me. I doubt if you'll hear from me ever again. Well, this looks like a nice, clean boxcar. Might as well get comfy.
Maisie.
Holy Pete. Harry, is that you?
Yeah, the syndicate is out gunning for me. I'm leaving town forever.
Oh, gee, that's too bad. Well, the train's moving now.
Hey, here comes somebody else.
Well, give him a hand up.
Hey, buddy, grab. I'll hand you.
Okay, I could make it. Thanks.
Holy smoke. It's Killer Dilla.
Harry. Maisie. Oh, gee, this is fate. I wrote a poem about fate once. It goes like...
Oh, no, no. I'm not going through this all over again. Well, I guess that's life. And Henry decided to write a poem about it. That was all right with me, except he wrote it out loud. It was more than we could stand, so as the train passed slowly over a river, Harry pushed him out of the door. I congratulated Harry, shook his hand, and then pushed him out with Henry. I figured they'd make a good team. And besides, I think a lady's entitled to a private boxcar. They'd heard of me in the next town, and for a little while I managed two Irishmen who fought as a team. I called them Sweeney and Murphy, two harps that beat as one. Then I got a telegram from my agent in Hollywood and rushed out there just in time to be turned down for the job. Well, I'm not worried. I'll find something interesting. Come on, Faith. Get going.
You've just heard The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. Maisie was written by John L. Green. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. Supporting cast included Sheldon Leonard, Marvin Miller, Peter Leeds, Hans Conried, and Ted DeCorsia. John Heaston speaking.
The Adventures of Maisie, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of October, 1951. That was a syndicated recording, as in stations could play it when it was convenient to their schedule, and according to the Washington Post, on station WASH, it was on at 8 p.m. in the evening, following coverage of the World Series from that day between the New York Yankees and New York Giants in Game 1. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. And now on to the new adventures of Michael Shane with Jeff Chandler and Jack Webb in a syndicated 1948 broadcast called The Case of the Bayou Monster.
I turned around as soon as I heard the noise. There, standing behind me, was a thing. About my height, with a face that was almost human, but was covered with hair. There were two giant claws with blood on them. I started backing away, but my foot caught in a vine and I went down. The thing came at me and I thought, Shane, you should have started believing in ghosts before it was too late.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman, is back again in his old haunts in New Orleans. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode, which we call The Case of the Bayou Monster.
Yes, sir?
My name's Shane. I'm supposed to meet a Mrs. Forsythe here.
Oh, yes, sir. Mrs. Forsythe is waiting for you over at that table.
Mrs. Forsythe?
Yes, sir. Please sit down. I'm Amy Forsythe.
Yeah, I know. Pleasant surprise.
Hmm?
I guess I was expecting someone older.
Oh?
Look, I don't quite understand why you wanted me to meet you here. I usually transact my business in my office.
Yes, of course. Mr. Shane, I'm hiring you for an indefinite period.
You're hiring? Look, Mrs. Forsythe, people usually tell me what they want me to do, and then I decide whether I take the job or not.
Well, I'm sure you'll take it.
You are? You sound like you were used to getting your own way.
Mr. Shane, the Forsythes have been getting their own way for something like 200 years.
Three cheers for the Forsythes.
That's what made us so powerful and so decadent.
Very interesting. But as an unpowerful, undecadent Shane, I still haven't heard any reason for you to be so sure you're hiring me.
$50 a day, Mr. Shane.
You're hiring me.
That's better. Family place Bonchance is out in the bayou country.
Bonchance? That means good luck.
Yes. My great-great-grandfather had notoriously bad luck for at least one member of each generation.
Oh.
But that's beside the point. What I want you to do, Mr. Shane, is come out to Bonchance. Stay there until you've found something or someone for me. And remove it.
Something or someone? I don't get it, Mrs. Forsythe.
That's not surprising. Because what I want you to find and remove is a ghost, Mr. Shane. A ghost.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the Bayou Monster.
Well, I've gotten a lot of strange assignments in my time. But when Mrs. Amy Forsythe hired me to run down a ghost at the ancestral mansion Bonchance back in the swamp country, I set some kind of record for myself. Amy was sort of a strange girl. At first, you thought she was very pretty. But then you began to notice little things about her that weren't. Her mouth, for instance, cruel. Her nose a little too thin. Her eyes might have been just a shade farther apart. Yeah, she looked like the last of an old family on its way out. But that 50 a day she offered me spelled lots of good time for one Michael Shane, so I took the job. I was to drive to the landing and meet a boatman who'd take me to Bonchamps that afternoon. But before I left, I dropped in to see Police Inspector Lefebvre.
Hello, Shane. So what do I owe this,
Honor's the word, Inspector.
Honor.
Oh, I just dropped by to tell you there aren't any dead bodies in my office today, Lefebvre.
Well, things are slack all over.
And to tell you, I'm going ghost hunting.
Come again?
No kidding. I've been hired to find a ghost at a place called Bonchamps back in the swamps.
Shane, you're a nice boy.
Why, Inspector?
I wouldn't want to see anything happen to you.
Huh?
So why don't you just stay away from Bonchamps?
Bonchamps?
Yeah.
Hey, look, what is this, Lefebvre? Don't tell me you believe in ghosts.
No, I don't believe in ghosts, Shane. I've lived around this part of the country all my life. Been in the force here in New Orleans 17 years. Seen a lot of strange things happen, but I don't believe in ghosts.
And why all of...
The whole Forsyth clan is a jinx outfit from way back.
Jinx? What do you mean?
Something happens in every generation. Something bad.
You know, Inspector, the more you talk, the more interested I'm getting in this new job of mine. I'll send you a full report.
Okay, Shane. Okay. I just hope you'll be alive to sign it.
Yeah, that's my friend, Inspector Lefebvre. Always there with a reassuring word. 3 hours later, a little after sunset, I drove up to the landing where I was to meet the boatman who'd take me to Bonchamps. He turned out to be a cajun named Achille, a thin fellow with a long mustache. I got in the pirogue, a long, narrow boat, and Achille shoved off. He sent the boat skimming along at an amazing clip. And pretty soon, we were deep into the bayou. The pale moon wasn't doing a very good job of piercing the misty haze that hung over the swamp. What with the matted trees and vines overhead, it was like a tunnel. A noisy tunnel at that. Sounded like the soundtrack to a jungle movie. You've been with the Forsyth family long, Akil?
Me. I worked for them long time. Since little children.
Oh? You ever hear anything about a ghost at Bonchamps?
Yes. It's Luke Garou here.
Luke Garou?
You call him werewolf, hmm?
A werewolf? Look, you don't actually believe it. Did you ever see this werewolf?
I think, yes.
What?
This long time ago, little boy me in bayou.
You actually saw it?
I seen this thing. Tall, with hair on face, long claws. I no wait for get good look. My teeth start to chatter, I run like wind.
Yeah, but how...
I tell Mama Cecile what I seen. She say is Luke Garou he.
Who's Mama Cecile?
Old one who live in swamp, she.
We almost there?
Yes. It's Bonchamps up ahead. See?
Yeah. I see. There it was, rearing up out of the swamp ahead of us. A rotting, gloomy mansion that sagged a little here and there, as if the ground below it was slowly sinking into the swamp. The whole place looked like an unburied corpse. There was a smell of decay in the air. We tied up at the landing, and a servant waiting with a torch took me up to the house. The little breeze that had come up was pushing the flame back and forth, and in the flickering light, the whole place looked like something you might dream about after eating too much lobster. Amy Forsyth, two men, and a giant hound dog were waiting for me in the library.
Quiet, Dirk. Quiet! Mr. Shane, I'd like you to meet my uncle, Edward Forsyth.
Mr. Forsyth?
How do you do, Mr. Shane?
And this is my husband, Paul Forsyth.
Mr. Forsyth again.
Hello.
And this is Dirk, my dog.
Yeah. Thought it was a Shetland pony at first.
Dirk's been with the Forsythes since he was a pup. Lately, I've kept him with me.
You know, I've made quite a discovery. Everybody around here seems to be named Forsyth.
Amy and I are sort of third cousins, twice removed, I believe. Any more questions, Mr. Shane?
Questions?
Or am I free to go now?
Huh?
Paul, please.
Yes, by all means, Paul. We mustn't upset dear Amy.
That will be enough, Uncle Edward.
We must wait here quietly, Paul, until Mr. Shane has finished questioning us. Then perhaps he will be kind enough to dismiss us.
Hey, look, I'm afraid I don't get any of this.
I must apologize to my husband and my uncle, Mr. Shane, for their lack of cordiality.
That's one way of putting it.
You see, I've told them why you're here, and they're not in sympathy with the purpose of your visit.
Oh?
There are some things, Mr. Shane, which are better left untouched.
Uncle Edward feels this comes under the heading of skeletons in the family closet.
I see.
But he'll do nothing to hinder your investigation, will you, Uncle Edward?
Of course not, dear niece Amy. Anything you say. Don't you find this a refreshing change, Mr. Shane? The uncle obeying the niece?
Well, I hadn't really thought much about it.
Amazing what a difference money makes, isn't it?
Money?
Edward.
Yes. You see, my dear niece controls the purse strings for what is left of us Forsythe. Something like $500,000, isn't it, Amy? Her thoughtful father arranged it that way.
Edward.
Amy has been kind enough to put me on an allowance. So you see, I must always yield to her wishes. Unless I want the allowance cut off.
I hardly think Mr. Shane is interested in our financial affairs.
On the contrary, Amy. Mr. Shane has cause to be very interested.
What do you mean?
Why, Amy may be kind enough to put you on an allowance, too. So I merely wanted to point out the danger of crossing her. Otherwise, she might... Well, Paul, remember that time you decided to go on a spree in New Orleans? You were gone a week. Amy cut off your allowance for a month.
Yes, I remember.
Stop it! Shut up!
Mr.
Shane, you will kindly ignore everything that's been said. Again, I apologize for my charming family.
Maybe we just better sort of start all over.
Yes, as I say, Uncle Edward will not hinder your investigation. I'm sure Paul will not either.
No, of course not. Although I do think it's a shame.
What is?
Spoiling a family legend like this.
Paul is spending his abundant spare time these days writing a history of the Forsythe family, Mr. Shane. Quite a scholarly picture it is, too, is wading through the bales of family papers and records he's unearthed.
Yes, he makes quite a figure of an author, doesn't he? See how he stands majestically by the fireplace, pipe in hand? That's his favorite pose nowadays.
Thanks.
Have you come across any mention of this ghost in your research, Mr. Forsythe?
The Beauchamp's werewolf? Oh, of course, Mr. Shane. According to the legend, he, or it, has made an appearance at least once each generation. It makes a fascinating story. That's why I'm sorry you're going to spoil it.
You think there's nothing to it, huh?
I think the people living in the bayou around here feel it their duty to keep the legend alive. So one of them faithfully reports seeing the werewolf every 15 years or so.
Oh? Your boatman, Akil, told me he thought he saw it years ago.
Oh, of course. Akil has been with the family all his life. He feels it his duty to help keep the story going.
It's just a legend, Paul. Perhaps with your brilliant mind you can explain the moaning we've been hearing lately.
Moaning?
Yes, Mr. Shane. An uncanny moan which seems to float through the house some night. According to what everyone says, it's the werewolf moaning.
Very simple, my dear. It could be that horrible animal of yours.
You mean Dirk here? Is that what you think, Ethel?
It's entirely possible, Mr. Shane. Dreadful beast. Well, it's late. I, for one, am going to bed. Good night, sweet relatives, and good night to you, Mr. Shane. Pleasant dreams.
We all went to our respective rooms after that, and I turned in. I lay awake a few minutes thinking about what a charming little family I'd stumbled into. Amy, her husband Paul, and her uncle Edward. After a while, I guess I drifted off to sleep. Of course, I started dreaming. Of course, the dream was about the werewolf. I dreamt he was here in the room with me, and I could hear him moaning. Then he came at me. I woke up on the floor in a cold sweat. Then I started sweating harder because I could still hear that moan. I pounded downstairs. The moan was everywhere in the house. Amy came running downstairs right behind me. Then we heard it from outside. The door. We both ran out and down the path. The breeze was still swelling the mist around. Then we stopped. There in the pale moonlight lay Amy's giant hound, Dirk.
Dirk!
Holy...
Mr. Shane, look! Look at Dirk! Look!
Yeah. Throat torn open. As if by giant claws. The next morning, I remembered the boatman Akil telling me about Mama Cecile, the old woman who lived in the bayou. So I went to see her. It was a little shack almost hidden by moss and vines, and as I came up to it, I saw someone slipping away into the undergrowth. Akil! Akil!
You call Akil?
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Me, I come to visit Mama Cecile.
Why? Now, why?
To tell her about Loup Garou, werewolf.
What about it?
Killed dog last night. He moan like thousand devils. I see dog dead. Me, I come to tell Mama Cecile. I tell her.
Why'd you tell her?
Mama Cecile, she always say, when werewolf around, come tell Mama Cecile.
Okay, Keel, I'll talk to you later. I let go of him. He melted away into the bayou. I went over to the hut and knocked on the door. There was a grunt from inside, which I took for come in, so I pushed open the door. Inside, it was dark and smoky. But after my eyes got used to it, I could make out a woman sitting in front of a small fire. She could have been 60 or 90 with a withered face that still showed plenty of power. She had the longest fingernails I've ever seen.
What do you want with Mama, Cecilia?
I want to talk to you about the werewolf.
I know nothing about werewolves.
Come on, a kid told me he always wanted to know when anyone had seen it. Why?
It's the avenging spirit of my family.
What, the werewolf?
Yes.
Now look, Mama Cecilia.
Yes. Many, many years ago, before my great-great-grandpapa was born, this land here was ours. Our family.
Huh?
Old Forsyth Mont steal it from us. Avenging spirit of us is werewolf. He kill one Forsyth each generation.
You don't expect me to...
Last of Forsyth now is at Bonchon. One day land will be mine. And last of my people. For years I lived here in Bayou. I wait. Land will be mine soon. I wait.
I somehow got the idea Mama Cecile meant exactly what she said. And the picture of that woman sitting in her hut just waiting for 50 years or so chilled me a little. I went back to Beauchamp's. Amy and her husband were in the library. She was squirming nervously in a chair, and he was in his favorite pose by the fireplace, and both of them looked slightly green around the gills.
Mr. Shane, what do you propose to do about this horrible thing?
Well, I'm not quite sure yet.
But you've got to do something. We can't go on like this.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're sort of the family historian. There's an old woman back in the bayou named...
Mama Cecile.
Yeah, yeah. She claims the first of the Forsythe sort of stole the land around here from her family.
What? As a matter of fact, she's probably quite right.
What, Paul? What
yes, you... I found an entry in old Josiah Forsythe's journal something over 100 years ago. He practically admits it.
Well, nice to know your ancestors were thieves.
My dear, couldn't you tell?
This is no time for your feeble attempts at humor, Paul. Mr. Shane.
Now, where's Edward this morning?
My dear uncle informed us the occurrence last night was more than his delicate nerves could stand. He said he was going to stay in New Orleans a couple of days.
I see. Well, look, I'm going to wander around here a little today, just sort of looking around. I'll be back around sunset.
Well, I should think so, Mr. Shane. Not one moment later.
I wandered around in the back country most of the afternoon. And then just about sundown, when I was walking through some pretty slushy ground on my way back to Bonchamps, I spotted a rowboat a little way offshore among some trees. There was a guy sitting in that boat who looked awfully familiar. As soon as he saw me, he rowed over to where I was standing.
Hello, Shane.
Well, Inspector Lefevre, what are you doing around here?
Fishing?
Yeah, sure.
See? Just caught it.
Some fish. Any smaller, you'd have to hold it with tweezers.
The big ones haven't started biting yet.
Look, Lefevre, if you had a whale in that boat, you couldn't convince me you came clear out here just to fish. Unless it was to fish for the Bonchamps werewolf.
Still hunting ghosts, huh, Shane?
It wasn't a ghost that tore that dog's throat open last night, or maybe you haven't heard about that.
Yeah. Shane, like I told you before, you're monkeying with stuff that could backfire. A lot of things could happen to you in this bayou, all of them bad.
Is this a word to the wise day for you, Inspector?
You can call it that. Why don't you stick to something safe? Fishing, for instance. Like me.
Sure. Like you.
Look, when you're fishing, if you hook one that's too big for you, you can always break your line and let him go.
Meaning I might not be able to, huh?
Meaning fishing's a nice, safe sport.
I'll tell you what. I'll sleep on it, Lefevre.
Yeah, well, you do that. Just one thing, though.
What's that?
Be sure you wake up.
I left Lefevre baiting a hook and went back to Bonchamps. Dinner that night was real jolly. Amy and Paul were about as cheerful as people in a dentist's waiting room. They spent most of the meal saying nasty things to each other and tossed in a few choice remarks about the absent Uncle Edward. We all turned in early, and I must have fallen asleep right away. Not for long. Suddenly, I was wide awake. Everything was very quiet, except for a faint noise downstairs. I slipped out of bed and reached for the light switch. No lights. I opened the door softly and eased into the hall. Amy's door was open, and even in the darkness, I could see her bed was unoccupied. Paul's door was open, too, and his bed was empty. I went downstairs as quietly as I could. And I heard that faint noise again, like somebody bumping into some furniture. It came from the library. I got to the door and stopped. I could see the dim outline of something coming toward me. I held my breath and waited. All right, stay where you are.
Relax, Shane, relax.
Inspector Lefebvre, I thought you were fishing.
At this time of night? Don't be silly. Nobody home, huh?
I don't know. The room's got empty all of a sudden.
What's the matter with the lights?
You got any other questions I can't answer? Look, there should be some candles over on the table near the fireplace. Yeah, here's one. You got a match?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's better. Hey, listen.
What's that?
A fever. That's the moan they say the werewolf makes.
What?
That sounds way too close for comfort. Hey, what's the big idea blowing out the candle, Fever?
I didn't blow it out.
Well, something did. You feel a draft or something?
Well, a breeze was starting to blow up when I got here. Maybe the wall was leaking.
Funny, man. There's a damper on the fireplace somewhere, like... Just, oh, here it is.
What happened to the moon?
What do you know? Here, light the candle again. Keep it away from the fireplace. Now, look. This damper on the side of the fireplace, I'll turn it like it was before. Yeah. When the damper's in that position and the breeze is blowing from a certain direction, the air passing through the narrow part of the chimney makes that wailing sound. That's your werewolf's moan.
It's not my werewolf, Shane. So what does all this prove?
A couple of things. Right now, we better find Amy and Paul in a hurry.
All right. You take one direction from the house, I'll take the other.
Okay.
And if you find anything, yell.
I will, Lefebvre. Believe me. I started out. In a couple of minutes, I was out of sight of the house. It was pretty sloshy going along here, and I had to take it slow. Every now and then, a damp hanging vine would slap me across the face. A couple of times, I slipped and went down. And then up ahead of me, I heard it. It was Amy. She was in a bad way. I tried to run. Finally, I managed to get onto drier ground. There was a faint trail in front of me, and I pounded along it. I rounded a bend, hurdled a fallen tree, and then I stopped. It wasn't a pretty sight. Amy was lying on the ground in front of me. And her throat looked like her dog's throat had looked. But Amy couldn't feel it anymore. She was dead. Well, there I stood, looking down at Amy lying there dead, hoping I'd never see a sight like that again. Then I heard a noise. I turned around. There, standing behind me, was a thing. About my height, with a face that was almost human, but was covered with hair. And there were two giant claws. There was blood on them. I started backing away, but my foot caught in a vine, and I went down. The thing came at me, and I thought, Shane, you should have started believing in ghosts before it was too late. Then the thing dove at me, and one of those claws came whistling through the air at my throat. I got my arm up just in time, and the claw bit into my shoulder. Then I realized it was an iron claw. I got one fist loose and popped it into the thing's face a couple of times. Then I got both hands around its throat and squeezed. The other claw was coming down at me closer and closer. I squeezed harder, and then suddenly the monster went limp. I pushed him off me. I was just getting slowly to my feet when Lefebvre pounded up.
You all right, Shane?
Yeah. I guess so. Can't say as much for my friend here. He a big enough fish for you?
Yeah. I used to dream about things that looked like that when I was a kid. I never thought I'd see one.
Yeah, well, this one's human. That's a mask, and those are iron claws.
Yeah. Pull the mask off him.
Yeah.
Well... You know him?
Yeah. Yeah, I know him. It's Amy's husband, Paul Forsythe. Yeah. Paul Forsythe. This generation's edition of the Bonchance Werewolf. An edition that Inspector Lefebvre promptly put out of circulation. I was happy to let him take over. Then later, Lefebvre and I left Bonchance and started for home in his rowboat. And I, having lost the toss, was rowing.
Some boy, Paul Forsythe, huh?
Yeah.
He told me he kept those props of his, the mask and the claws, hidden out in the bayou. Wonder how he got a hold of them in the first place.
I think I know the answer to that. Paul spent a lot of time digging through old family papers. He was going to write a history of the family. Probably came across the secret there, where the mask and claws were hidden, how to work the damper on the chimney.
That's probably it. I guess one member of each generation knew about the mask and claws. Probably used to put them on now and then to scare all the bayou people. You know, Shane, the Forsythe certainly must have been a pleasant lot.
Yeah. That'd be their idea of a joke, I guess. Only Paul decided to revive the legend for more practical purposes. He fill you in on the motive?
Yeah.
Money?
Mostly. He would have gotten control of the $500,000 Amy had. Add to that, he had a girl in New Orleans. Add to that, he hated Amy.
That's funny.
What's that?
Oh, just that the legend of the Bonchance werewolf's been going on for over 100 years. All there really was behind the legend was a mask, a pair of iron claws, and a howling chimney.
And the fact that most of the people around here believed in it. Don't forget that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, I can see how you can get believing almost anything out in this bayou. I'll be glad to see the last of it. It gives me the creeps. What?
Stop blowing.
What's the matter?
Shh.
Hey, what are you reaching for, you gun?
No, look at the big one.
Big what?
Fish. I'm going to hook him.
All the fever.
Quiet, Shane. I told you I came out here to fish, didn't I?
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. The New Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don W. Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from 1948. Wrapping up this hour of mystery, on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.